Good Friday. Today is September the 27th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, insects and plants are on the agenda for today. We want to talk about ways to keep certain insects out of the house as we're getting to that time of year. Also talk about care for those fall mums. Beautiful color this time of year. We want to make it last, and we'll have all the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to take some time this Friday morning and look out in the backyard and garden. We want to start off today talking about some insect pests that are starting to make their way into people's houses, talking about stink bugs. And a lot of folks will see them on the screens of their windows. They may see, obviously, them crawling around on plants and things. But this is the time of year when some of those types of critters try and make their way into the house to begin to overwinter. The days have gotten shorter, the nights are cooling off, and that triggers the mechanism that tells them it's time to seek shelter. So it's important to make sure the best way to deal with these is to have no way for them to get into the house first. Once they're in the house, you have to find ways to either vacuum them up and capture them and release them, or find ways to get rid of them in other ways. But if you can keep them out from the start, that's the best bet. So it's making sure your screens are all in good repair and you have those screens closed. You seal up any cracks around windows or doors, any other crevices that they may be able to sort of crawl through and get in. Lots of little things we can do. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as they say. We also want to talk about a popular outdoor plant this time of year, and that is mums. A lot of folks either picking them up at garden centers or farmers markets or different places like that, bringing them home. A beautiful splash of color, especially as dry as it's been, and not much color out there in a lot of landscapes. But keeping that color going and how you care for them can be a little bit of a challenge sometimes. Mums are unlike other flowering plants in that sort of what you see is what you get. When you buy them from a garden center or a different market, you'll see a lot of blooms on top. Some will be open, some will be closed. Likely they will not put more on. Any of those blossoms or blooms that were there are what you're going to get. The ones that are open will be open, and then the other ones, hopefully, if you care for it, will continue to open, but it's probably going to not generate or produce new ones. Watering is a key. They can, with all their foliage, and especially with some of the dry weather we experience, those can dry out rather quickly. So making sure you water them daily is going to be important, but not overwatering. And again, typically they will come in a pot that drains very easily. If you transfer them to another pot, again, make sure there's drain holes at the bottom, because we want to make sure that we are watering them thoroughly, that soil is soaked, and basically that, you know, it's got a way though to get out and run out the bottom of that pot. Now, a common mistake folks will make is they'll try and water them like they do a hanging basket or other plants, and water them from the top, and it's not the foliage that needs the water, it's the soil, and so a lot of that can be shed off. And also, as those flowers or the blossoms get wet, that can actually lead to infection and cause them to deteriorate much more quickly. So the idea is to water the soil, not necessarily water the plant. Now, you also have to be careful. As you know, as those grow, they become very brittle, and if you try and shove a hose down in them or a watering can, they can break or split. So really sort of the best route is to have just a small hose, tip that pot to the side a little bit, sort of push back the foliage, and make sure you're getting the water into the pot, into the soil, that it gets a thorough soaking. You'll see it start to run out the holes in the bottom, and then let it go. You're not getting the foliage necessarily wet per se. You're not causing any damage to the plant. You're putting water where it's needed, and that is the soil and to the roots. So do those tips, and hopefully you will be able to enjoy that fall color for weeks to come. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. Well, changing directions in a very different direction, it's time we start talking about the holidays and several firsts for this year's U.S. Capitol Christmas tree and its upcoming journey, unique on several fronts. USDA's Rod Bain tells us more as the process begins.
What is unique about the 2024 U.S. Capitol Christmas tree? Not the dimensions, as the selected tree must meet specific height requirements by the architect of the Capitol. Yet, in so many ways, the Sitka spruce coming from Alaska presents several firsts. One of them is not location, though.
For Alaska, this is really only the second year that we've been able to do this. The first time was in 2015 when the Capitol Christmas tree came from the Chugach National Forest.
Yet Brandon Rail of the U.S. Forest Service in Alaska points out that the location of the 2024 Capitol Christmas tree is a first, an island on the Tongass National Forest. And how was this tree discovered?
We started utilizing a lot of new technology to really narrow down the search for our tree candidates. Because the Tongass National Forest is so big, encompassing multiple islands, we used LIDAR scans that was taken by drones. And with that data, we were able to narrow down our search to individual trees that met the height criteria and a variety of other criteria that we used.
The island locale of the Capitol Christmas tree also presents logistical challenges to be met with innovative solutions. For instance,
we have to mobilize all the equipment for the harvest by barge, get it over to the other island, do the harvest.
Also unique is how the chosen tree is to be harvested.
Instead of doing a traditional harvest where we pick the chainsaw and cut the tree at the base, we're going to harvest the entire tree, including the root wad. And we're going to lay that down on the trailer and pack that root wad with materials to hold the moisture. And we have a watering system that is being developed by one of the local stem groups that is going to keep the water flowing to that root wad for the entire duration of the trip.
Another first for a U.S. Capitol Christmas tree, part of its journey to Washington, D.C., will be done by barge.
Barge everything back to Wrangell, prepare the tree there, put it on a bigger barge, ship it down to Seattle, transfer it back onto the truck, and then we can hit the road for our nearly 3,000-mile journey across the lower 48 from coast to coast.
The two-week journey resulting in this year's Capitol Christmas tree arriving at the Capitol grounds the week before Thanksgiving. More details about this year's tree and its scheduled trip are available at this web address, www.uscapitolchristmastree.com. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.